Chapter 22. Be engaged to root us out, but if we resolve to live there as in retirement, and plant in the country as private men, and give over our trade of pirating, then, indeed, we might plant and settle ourselves where we pleased. But then, I told him, the best way would be to treat with the natives, and buy a tract of land of them farther up the country, seated upon some navigable river, where boats might go up and down for pleasure, but not ships to endanger us, that thus planting the high ground with cattle, such as cows and goats, of which the country also was full, to be sure we might live here as well as any men in the world. And I owned to him, I thought it was a good retreat for those that were willing to leave off and lay down, and yet did not care to venture home and be hanged, that is to say, to run the risk of it. Captain Avery, however, he made no positive discovery of his intentions, seemed to me to decline my notion of going up into the country to plant. On the contrary, it was apparent he was of Captain Wilmot's opinion, that they might maintain themselves on shore, and yet carry on their cruising trade too, and upon this they resolved. But, as I afterwards understood, about 50 of their men went up the country, and settled themselves in an inland place as a colony. Whether they are there still or not, I cannot tell, or how many of them are left alive. But it is my opinion they are there still, and that they are considerably increased, for, as I hear, they have got some women among them, though not many, for it seems 5 Dutch women and 3 or 4 little girls were taken by them in a Dutch ship, which they afterwards took going to Macha, and 3 of those women, marrying some of these men, went with them to live in their new plantation. But of this, I speak only by hearsay. As we lay here some time, I found our people mightily divided in their notions. Some were for going this way, and some that, till at last I began to foresee they would part company, and perhaps we should not have men enough to keep together to man the great ship. So I took Captain Wilmot aside, and began to talk to him about it, but soon perceived that he inclined himself to stay at Madagascar, and having got a vast wealth for his own share, had secret designs of getting home some way or other. I argued the impossibility of it, and the hazard he would run, either of falling into the hands of thieves and murderers in the Red Sea, who would never let such a treasure as his pass their hands, or of his falling into the hands of the English, Dutch, or French, who would certainly hang him for a pirate. I gave him an account of the voyage I had made from this very place to the continent of Africa, and what a journey it was to travel on foot. In short, nothing could persuade him, but he would go into the Red Sea with the sloop, and where the children of Israel passed through the sea dry shod, and, landing there, would travel to Grand Cairo by land, which is not above 80 miles, and from thence he said he could ship himself, by the way of Alexandria, to any part of the world. I represented the hazard, and indeed the impossibility, of his passing by Macha and Jitta without being attacked, if he offered it by force, or plundered, if he went to get leave, and explained the reasons of it, so much and so effectually, that, though at last he would not hearken to it himself, none of his men would go with him. They told him they would go anywhere with him to serve him, but that this was running himself and them into certain destruction, without any possibility of avoiding it, or probability of answering his end. The captain took what I said to him quite wrong, and pretended to resent it, and gave me some buccaneer words upon it, but I gave him no return to it but this, that I advised him for his advantage, that if he did not understand it so, it was his fault, not mine, that I did not forbid him to go, nor had I offered to persuade any of the men not to go with him, though it was to their apparent destruction. However, warm heads are not easily cooled. The captain was so eager that he quitted our company, and, with most part of his crew, went over to Captain Avery, and sorted with his people, taking all the treasure with him, which, by the way, was not very fair in him, we having agreed to share all our gains, whether more or less, whether absent or present. Our men muttered a little at it, but I pacified them as well as I could, and told them it was easy for us to get as much, if we minded our hits, and Captain Wilmot had set us a very good example, for, by the same rule, the agreement of any further sharing of profits with them was at an end. I took this occasion to put into their heads some part of my further designs, which were, to range over the Eastern Sea, and see if we could not make ourselves as rich as Mr. Avery, who, it was true, had gotten a prodigious deal of money, though not one half of what was said of it in Europe. Our men were so pleased with my forward, enterprising temper, that they assured me that they would go with me, one and all, over the whole globe, wherever I would carry them, and as for Captain Wilmot, they would have nothing more to do with him. This came to his ears, and put him into a great rage, so that he threatened, if I came on shore, he would cut my throat. I had information of it privately, but took no notice of it at all, only I took care not to go unprovided for him, and seldom walked about, but in very good company. However, at last Captain Wilmot and I met, and talked over the matter very seriously, and I offered him the sloop, to go where he pleased, or, if he was not satisfied with that, I offered to take the sloop, and leave him the great ship, but he declined both, and only desired, that I would leave him 6 carpenters, which I had in our ship more than I had need of, to help his men to finish the sloop, that was begun, before we came thither, by the men, that lost their ship. This I consented readily to, and lent him several other hands, that were useful to them, and in a little time they built a stout brigantine, able to carry 14 guns and 200 men. What measures they took, and how Captain Avery managed afterwards, is too long a story to meddle with here, nor is it any of my business, having my own story still upon my hands. We lay here, about these several simple disputes, almost 5 months, when, about the latter end of March, I set sail with the great ship, having in her 44 guns and 400 men, and the sloop, carrying 80 men. We did not steer to the Malabar coast, and so to the Gulf of Persia, as was first intended, the east monsoons blowing yet too strong, but we kept more under the African coast, where we had the wind variable till we passed the line, and made the Cape Bassa, in the latitude of 4 degrees 10 minutes. From thence, the monsoons beginning to change to the NE and NE, we led it away, with the wind large, to the Maldives, a famous ledge of islands, well known by all the sailors who have gone into those parts of the world, and, leaving these islands a little to the south, we made Cape Comorin, the southernmost land of the coast of Malabar, and went round the Isle of Ceylon. Here we lay by a while to wait for purchase, and here we saw 3 large English East India ships going from Bengal, or from Fort St. George, homeward for England, or rather for Bombay and Surat, till the trade set inches we brought to, and hoisting an English ancient and pendant, lay by for them, as if we intended to attack them. They could not tell what to make of us a good while, though they saw our colors, and I believe at first they thought us to be French. But as they came nearer to us, we let them soon see what we were, for we hoisted a black flag, with 2 cross daggers in it, on our main top mast head, which let them see what they were to expect. We soon found the effects of this, for at first they spread their ancients, and made up to us in a line, as if they would fight us, having the wind offshore, fair enough to have brought them on board us. But when they saw what force we were of, and found we were cruisers of another kind, they stood away from us again, with all the sail they could make. If they had come up, we should have given them an unexpected welcome, but as it was, we had no mind to follow them, so we let them go, for the same reasons which I mentioned before. But though we let them pass, we did not design to let others go at so easy a price. It was but the next morning that we saw a sail standing round Cape Comorin, and steering, as we thought, the same course with us. We knew not at first what to do with her, because she had the shore on her larboard quarter, and if we offered to chase her, she might put into any port or creek, and escape us. But, To prevent this, we sent the sloop to get in between her and the land. As soon as she saw that, she hauled in to keep the land aboard, and when the sloop stood towards her, she made right ashore with all the canvas she could spread. The sloop, however, came up with her and engaged her, and found she was a vessel of 10 guns, Portuguese built, but in the Dutch trader's hands, and manned by Dutchmen, who were bound from the Gulf of Persia to Batavia, to fetch spices and other goods from thence. The sloop's men took her, and at the rummaging of her, before we came up, she had in her some European goods, and a good round sum of money, and some pearl, so that, though we did not go to the Gulf for the pearl came to us out of the Gulf, and we had our share of it. This was a rich ship, and the goods were of very considerable value, besides the money and the pearl. We had a long consultation here, what we should do with the men, for to give them the ship, and let them pursue their voyage to Java, would be to alarm the Dutch factory there, who are by far the strongest in the Indies, and to make our passage that way impracticable. Whereas we resolved to visit that part of the world in our way, but were not willing to pass the great Bay of Bengal, where we hoped for a great deal of purchase, and therefore it behoved us not to be waylaid before we came there, because they knew we must pass by the Straits of Malacca, or those of Sunda, and either way it was very easy to prevent us. While we were consulting this in the great cabin, the men had had the same debate before the mast, and it seems the majority there were for pickling up the poor Dutchmen among the herrings. In a word, they were for throwing them all into the sea. Poor William, the Quaker, was in great concern about this, and comes directly to me to talk about it. "Harkee," says William, "what wilt thou do with these Dutchmen that thou hast on board? Thou wilt not let them go, I suppose," says he. "Why," says I, "William, would you advise me to let them go?" "No," says William, "I cannot say it is fit for thee to let them go, that is to say, to go on with their voyage to Batavia, because it is not for thy turn that the Dutch at Batavia should have any knowledge of thy being in these seas." "Well then," says I to him, "I know no remedy but to throw them overboard. You know, William," says I, "a Dutchman swims like a fish, and all our people here are of the same opinion as well as I." At the same time I resolved it should not be done, but wanted to hear what William would say. He gravely replied, "If all the men in the ship were of that mind, I will never believe that thou wilt be of that mind thyself, for I have heard thee protest against cruelty in all other cases." "Well, William," says I, "that is true, but what then shall we do with them?" "Why," says William, "is there no way but to murder them? I am persuaded thou canst not be in earnest." "No, indeed, William," says I am not in earnest, but they shall not go to Java, no, nor to Ceylon, that is certain." "But," says William, "the men have done thee no injury at all, thou hast taken a great treasure from them. What canst thou pretend to hurt them for?" "Nay, William," says I, "do not talk of that. I have pretense enough, if that be all. My pretense is, to prevent doing me hurt, and that is as necessary a piece of the law of self-preservation as any you can name. But the main thing is, I know not what to do with them, to prevent their prating." While William and I were talking, the poor Dutchmen were openly condemned to die, as it may be called, by the whole ship's company, and so warm were the men upon it, that they grew very clamorous. And when they heard that William was against it, some of them swore they should die, and if William opposed it, he should drown along with them. But, as I was resolved to put an end to their cruel project, so I found it was time to take upon me a little, or the bloody humor might grow too strong, so I called the Dutchmen up, and talked a little with them. First, I asked them if they were willing to go with us. Two of them offered it presently, but the rest, which were 14, declined it. "Well then," said I, "where would you go?" They desired they should go to Ceylon. No, I told them I could not allow them to go to any Dutch factory, and told them very plainly the reasons of it, which they could not deny to be just. I let them know also the cruel, bloody measures of our men, but that I had resolved to save them, if possible, and therefore I told them I would set them on shore at some English factory in the Bay of Bengal, or put them on board any English ship I met, after I was past the Straits of Sunder of Malacca, but not before. For, as to my coming back again, I told them I would run the venture of their Dutch power from Batavia, but I would not have the news come there before me, because it would make all their merchant ships lay up, and keep out of our way. It came next into our consideration, what we should do with their ship, but this was not long resolving, for there were but two ways, either to set her on fire, or to run her on shore, and we chose the last. So we set her foresail with the tack at the cat head, and lashed her helm a little to starboard, to answer her head sail, and so set her a-going, with neither cat or dog in her, and it was not above 2 hours, before we saw her run right ashore upon the coast, a little beyond the Cape Comorin, and away we went round about Ceylon, for the coast of Coromandel. We sailed along there, not in sight of the shore only, but so near, as to see the ships in the road at Fort Street David, Fort Street George, and at the other factories along that shore, as well as along the coast of Golconda, carrying our English ancient, when we came near the Dutch factories, and Dutch colors when we passed by the English factories. We met with little purchase upon this coast, except two small vessels of Golconda, bound across the bay with bales of calicoes and muslins and wrought silks, and 15 bales of romals, from the bottom of the bay, which were going, on whose account we knew not, to Achin, and to other ports on the coast of Malacca. We did not inquire to what place in particular, but we let the vessels go, having none but Indians on board. In the bottom of the bay we met with a great junk belonging to the Mogul's court, with a great many people, passengers as we supposed them to be. It seems they were bound for the river Hulier Ganges, and came from Sumatra. This was a prize worth taking indeed, and we got so much gold in her, besides other goods which we did not meddle with pepper in particular, that it had like to have put an end to our cruise. For almost all my men said we were rich enough, and desired to go back again to Madagascar. But I had other things in my head still, and when I came to talk with them, and set friend William to talk with them, we put such further golden hopes into their heads, that we soon prevailed with them to let us go on. My next design was to leave all the dangerous straits of Malacca, Singapore, and Sunda, where we could expect no great booty, but what we might light on in European ships, which we must fight for, and though we were able to fight, and wanted no courage, even to desperation, yet we were rich too, and resolved to be richer, and took this for our maxim, that while we were sure the wealth we sought was to be had without fighting, we had no occasion to put ourselves to the necessity of fighting for that which would come upon easy terms. We left, therefore, the Bay of Bengal, and coming to the coast of Sumatra, we put in at a small port, where there was a town, inhabited only by Malays, and here we took in fresh water, and a large quantity of good pork, pickled up and well salted, notwithstanding the heat of the climate, being in the very middle of the torrid zone, viz. In 3 degrees 15 minutes north latitude. We also took on board both our vessels 40 hogs alive, which served us for fresh provisions, having abundance of food for them, such as the country produced, such as guams, potatoes, and a sort of coarse rice, good for nothing else, but to feed the swine. We killed one of these hogs every day, and found them to be excellent meat. We took in also a monstrous quantity of ducks, and cocks and hens, the same kind as we have in England, which we kept for change of provisions, and if I remember right, we had no less than 2,000 of them, so that at first we were pestered with them very much, but we soon lessened them by boiling, roasting, stewing, and see for we never wanted, while we had them. My long projected design now lay open to me, which was to fall in amongst the Dutch Spice Islands, and see what mischief I could do there. Accordingly, we put out to sea the 12th of August, and passing the line on the 17th, we stood away due south, leaving the Straits of Sunda and the Isle of Java on the east, till we came to the latitude of 11 degrees 20 minutes, when we steered east and E.N. E., having easy gales from the W.S. W. till we came among the Moluccas, or Spice Islands. We passed those seas with less difficulty than in other places, the winds to the south of Java being more variable, and the weather good, though sometimes we met with squally weather and short storms. But when we came in among the Spice Islands themselves, we had a share of the monsoons, or trade winds, and made use of them accordingly. The infinite number of islands which lie in these seas embarrassed us strangely, and it was with great difficulty that we worked our way through them. Then we steered for the north side of the Philippines, when we had a double chance for purchase, viz. Either to meet with the Spanish ships from Acapulco, on the coast of New Spain, or we were certain not to fail of finding some ships or junks of China, who, if they came from China, would have a great quantity of goods of value on board, as well as money, or if we took them going back, we should find them laden with nutmegs and cloves from Banda and Ternate, or from some of the other islands. We were right in our guesses here to a tittle, and we steered directly through a large outlet, which they call a strait, though it be 15. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.